Suzanne Brockman, when I hear her name, I immediately think of her immensely addictive Troubleshooter series. Together, Melanie Eubank and Patrick Lawler have narrated 6 of the Troubleshooter titles and now have recorded the first in Brockman's new Reluctant Hero series, Do or Die. Suze, Melanie, and Patrick make quite the team, and it's clear there is a great deal of mutual respect and friendship between the three, as you will hear in today's and tomorrow's chats. All 4 of us, along with our producer, Brenda, hooked up via Skype for this recording, and you will hear a lot of laughing. That's partly from statements that are made, but it's also due to the fact that we saw each other's expressions and laughter on the screen as we recorded. Melanie participated in our chat from the beginning, but there was an issue with her sound that we didn't discover until a few minutes in. Since our talk is so relaxed, we decided to go with it as is. Today's talk includes details about the release of Do or Die, while tomorrow's talk includes some big Brockman audio news. I'd like to remind those listening from their computers that you can also download this chat to your MP3 player or listen directly from Audio Gals on your phone. Now let's get started. Welcome, Suze. We're big fans of your writing here at Audio Gals. We've been both reading and listening to your books for years. We're thrilled to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
And it sounds like we're going to be even bigger fans of your audiobooks than we already are. Our welcome to Audio Team Brockman, Melanie and Patrick.
Hey.
I'm directing my first question to Suze. There's so much to talk about these days when it comes to Suzanne Brockman audiobooks. Best I can tell, there are around 48 Brockman audios from as early as 2002. We can't begin to talk about your entire audio backlist, but there are a couple of big Brockman audio events in the works. Let's start with Do or Die, the first in your Reluctant Hero series, which will be released simultaneously in hardback, ebook, and audio format tomorrow. Please tell our listeners about Do or Die.
Sure. The story is about a disgraced former Navy SEAL named Ian Dunn, and he is tapped by the FBI to lead a kind of a politically tricky rescue mission of 2 very important kidnapped children. And the U.S. government can't be involved. So they approach Ian, who is serving time in prison in Florida. And they basically offer him a get-out-of-jail-free card, and he says, nope, he'd rather stay in jail, thanks. And one of the lawyers who's sent to represent him, she's a young woman named Phoebe, who is the heroine of the book, and she thinks that's kind of strange, and she starts to dig and try to figure out what's going on with Ian. And meanwhile, the government springs Ian to his protests, and of course, he was in jail on a totally different more personal mission, and that gets royally messed up, and all kinds of hijinks ensue, and it's a fast-paced action-adventure romance, a dramedy with maybe a little bit more comedy than some of my more recent books, and I think that audiobook listeners are really going to enjoy Patrick and Melanie's delivery of both the funny parts and the action.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I see that Do or Die is more than 500 pages in print format. Patrick and Melanie, I know you have already recorded Do or Die. Any idea how many hours that will translate into for audio listeners?
1,000,000 hours.
Yeah, it's 1,000,000 hours. The rest of your life can be spent listening to Suzanne Brock. Actually, I know it is 19 and a half hours.
Whoa.
Total. Oh, yeah. Wow.
That might be the longest yet, unless you, I'm assuming you didn't read it super fast. So that's one way of doing it, right?
We ripped through it. We were like we were on speed just to get it in. It's easily the longest one that you've done so far. And
yes.
But it's also like, one of the great perks of this job, I think Melanie was saying it the other day, is that we get to read this stuff before anybody else does, and it is really fun. This one's a lot of fun. We had a good time reading it.
Well, it's just more for us to enjoy once we tune in and we know it's going to be there and it's a guaranteed great listen. Hey, I love that it's longer like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really looking forward to hearing it. I, you know, I still haven't heard it yet. And so that's on my my list of, I've been kind of poking Blackstone, you know, let me have a listen, because I'm just dying to hear it. I love the teamwork. I love everything about the delivery of the audiobooks with the dual narrator format, and with Patrick and Melanie in particular. So it's going to be, I'm looking forward to it too.
Suze, I know you write from what is referred to as a deep point of view. Can you explain just what that means?
Absolutely. Okay, so think of point of view as the camera lens through which an author tells the story. So you have everything from objective point of view to subjective point of view. Objective point of view being the security camera that hangs in the corner of the room. And that camera just kind of reports the action that happens in front of it. So it doesn't, it's very objective. It doesn't have any feelings. It doesn't have any personality. It simply reports. Now, when you say we were to move that camera to the top of a character's head, and the character just had this camera strapped on the top of their head, and everywhere that character looked, we would see that. And if they turned, and we'd see that. But we can't see what's going on behind them, right? So it's slightly more subjective. Now, if you take the camera and you put it not just on top of the character's head, but inside of the character's head, so that we see the action through the character's eyes. I get to tell the story through the character's words. I can tell you what the character is feeling, and really inform the reader of the character's perspective. And this is something, because it's so deep, it's something that I call deep point of view. Now, it's very similar. Deep point of view is to first person point of view. And first person would be when you use, you know, I, me, mine, when you're telling the story as if I am the main character. But with deep point of view, third person, I'm still using he, him, his, but yet every word I write is from that character's perspective. So we have that character's thoughts and feelings basically point of view. So now, okay, because I write this way, and because I choose to write one character's point of view for each scene in my books, it makes it really easy to use the dual narrator format. Okay, so let's use Do or Die as an example. Okay, so this book has six different characters whose point of view I use to tell the story. Now, there's Ian Dunn, the hero. He's the former Navy SEAL. There's Phoebe. She's the heroine. She's the lawyer. There's Ian's brother, Aaron. There's Martell Griffin, who is the FBI's lawyer. There's another woman named Francine, and there's another character named Shelley. Now, so when recording this book, all of the scenes that I write from a male character's point of view, so Ian and Martell, for example, those scenes are read by Patrick. Now, the scenes from the women's point of view, so Phoebe, Francine, that those scenes would all be read by Melanie. So my books, they don't have a narrator per se. There's just these six characters who are telling the story through their eyes, with their voices, and Melanie and Patrick get to take turns with telling that story with those characters' voices.
I think it is important that listeners understand that concept, as it impacted my own listening experience. The first time I listened to one of Patrick and Melanie's narrations of a Brockman title, I was puzzled, wondering why, as a listener, I needed two narrators performing each character's voice. But once I understood the deep point of view, it made all the difference. I no longer think about it. It's how does that point of view impact audio recordings?
Okay, I'll start. My job as the writer is to make sure that each scene's point of view is very clear. So hopefully I have already done that with the writing. If I do my job right, it should be obvious whose head we're inside of within the first few sentences of each scene. And I know that from working with Patrick and Melanie for years now, that that they also have an ability to pick that up really quickly. So it's I think, I don't know, you guys, I mean, have there been mistakes made? I mean, have you started a scene and suddenly realized, whoopsie, I'm in Phoebe's point of view, or vice versa?
It's happened. It doesn't happen very often because it is pretty clear. But we used to use a little trick, like the first person named was usually the person that it was, but that has since gone by the wayside. It doesn't really happen that much anymore. But really, it's fairly clear. There's been what over the last, what have we been doing these like 12 years, 10, 12 years? I think there's only been a handful of times where we really had to, you know, kind of debate it before we figured out which one it was. It's usually pretty clear.
Yeah, and I'm always available by phone if you need me. But
well, we kind of don't want you to know that we ever have a question. We want you to just think we know everything.
So. But of course you do. I know that you do. I know. And it whether always we comes do or not. Right, so it always comes out right. So it's really fun to listen to. Really fun.
Well, good. It's kind of an interesting way of reading too, because you get a lot of times there's crossover in the same scene. So the same material will be covered by two completely different points of view. And it makes for some fun when one person, you know, thinks they're, you know, God's gift and then find out later that he's probably a doofus, you know.
Yeah.
Notice I used the male on that. But
exactly,
that's usually the case.
But, and that's actually a writing technique called scene and sequel. So you have the scene from one character's point of view, and then the next scene is a sequel where another character kind of recounts the previous scene. And so you get to have that almost he said, she said feel to it, where you see, oh, well, maybe what one character was thinking isn't quite an accurate representation of what was really going on here. So it's a really fun thing to be able to do, and it's particularly in a romance novel, you know, when you want to have that interplay between the two main characters.
Melanie, how do the three of you as author-narrator team work together before each recording?
Patrick and I get an advanced copy of the manuscript, and we read it individually. And then prepare individually and do our own research. And I think probably if there are recurring characters, we go back to our notes and try to figure that out. And then we come up with a list of questions for Suze. And then usually Patrick contacts her so that we're not everybody bombarding her with, you know, questions while she's trying to relax on the beach in Florida after she's written this gigantic book. Then we get together in the studio, and Patrick and I basically compare notes and see if we have any additional questions, and we confer about characterizations sometimes. Then just revisit any characters that are recurring and make sure that they're fresh in our minds for the start of the book. And then we just roll. And we have sort of a thing where it the first person to come across one of our words that can be pronounced either way or either way, the person who reads it first decides how that character says that word. And then forever after, we have to monitor each other to make sure that when that character says that word, it is the correct pronunciation. And the first part, like if it's a point of view, if it's a female point of view and a new character is introduced and it's a female character, I get to decide on the voice for the most part. And then Patrick does the male voices. And then we sort of try to match as much as is possible with his voice and my voice. But it's fun. It's collaborative. And the books are such a joy that, you know, it's so exciting to get there and get started on them and have those characters come off the page. And we're just as fond of them as you fans are, I swear.
Well, thank you. You know, I have to tell you that my prep I do a happy dance in my office when I find out that the scheduling works out and that both Patrick and Melanie are on board for the recording session. So my preliminary work is that. But I do have to say that there are times when
when I have given Patrick spoilers for things that are going to happen later in the series, I remember doing it for Born to Darkness. I told him something that's I haven't written the sequel books yet, but I had plans for one of the main characters that he needed to know, because I knew he was going to have to, it was going to impact his voice for this character in future books. And so he knows, he's got some spoilers in advance of just about everybody in the world. I think there are 3 people who know this about this book, and he's one of them. Maybe he's forgotten it by now, but shh, Patrick, don't tell.
I know, I've got it written down somewhere. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But it was important, because if the series was going to continue in it, and I hope it will someday, I didn't want to have him talk himself into a corner or create a voice that would make it harder for this particular plot point to happen. It's a fun process, and the coolest thing is to be able to talk about characters and to actually have communication with the actors who are reading the book. I have the utmost respect for actors, and prior to my relationship with Patrick and Melanie and the recording of Flashpoint, I didn't own the audio rights to the book, so I didn't have any input at all into what was going on. The audiobooks would just kind of show up at my house, and I'd be like, "Oh, an audiobook," and I'd put it on, and I'd be like, "Oh, an audiobook." And so when I went into our collaboration, when it was originally with Brilliance Audio, and I pitched the idea for the dual narrator. I mean, I knew I really wanted to try this thing with having the male and female readers, and it was really important to me that that we find readers who were able to handle both the comedy elements and the drama, and also. There's something about, you know, romance novels where a lot of it is over the top, but the over the topness needs to be done with a wink and a smile. It needs to be respected, and because there's a sweetness to the stories. These are stories about hope and love and connection, and it was really important to me to find actors who were able to tell these stories with the appropriate kind of, you know, wink in their voices, and yet be able to deliver that sweetness that just kind of breaks your heart. And I remember the sample tapes that I was given. Patrick was one of the first tapes I got, and I was like, "That guy, I want that guy." And with Melanie, I remember talking to the people who are in charge of casting, and it was really important to me. So many of my earlier audiobooks, the ones that I didn't have any say in, had these, I'm sure, lovely women reading the books, but they were very proper with their kind of like, I think of that elocution lesson from Singing in the Rain, you know, round tones. and I'm making the ladies say bad words. and that kind of freaked me out. And so I really wanted a real woman. I really wanted somebody who kind of talk like me, and so I'm trying to explain this to the casting directors over there, and they sent me one of the first tapes. They sent me was Melanie, and I was like, "That, I need her. She needs to read my books, because she sounds like a friend. She sounds, you know, this was, and she also was able to pitch her voice in a way, because some of my female characters can kick your ass, you know, and I wanted, you know, so often you have an audiobook narrator who, the female voices are so little, and it's like, no, I need a woman. And hearing Melanie sample tape, I was very excited about that. So that was really cool to be able to have input into that for the first time too. Wow. So, you know, I mean, and we've, Melanie has,
had some adventures through the years with raising a family, and it kind of put her out of commission for a while. Well, for us, I'm sure she was fully in commission for other things. But we've used other female readers too. Renee Roudman was one of them. We love her very much, and Angela Daw, I think, is somebody that Patrick's worked with. And but Melanie remains my first love, and so imagine that she was ready to come back. I was very excited, but it's really great because we do know other women who can do quite a good job too. But really, I just, there's something about Melanie that just floats my boat. Let's put it that way.
Well, and you know, as a listener, there's something about what you're saying that really hits me right too, because we like to think that the narrators have the author's insight into what's going on. When we hear that there is no communication, which I think that's more the norm than not, we are wondering, do they really understand, you know, what's going on? Of course, we really get into narrations more than your average listener, I know, and to know that Patrick has a hint of what, something that may, it's going to happen in the future, that's pretty exciting to us as well. So,
Melanie knows it too because she was there.
Okay.
And I hope she remembers what it is. No, I. But it's big.
All right, so let's go to Do or Die. I know you had a live chat, the three of you, with readers on January the 15th. Patrick and Melanie, it sounded as though the two of you sit in the recording booth at the same time. If that's so, does one sit quietly while the other performs? Or do you actually record in separate studios at separate times? And where did this recording take place?
Yes. All of the above. We've done it every one of those ways. And this past time we worked at Blackstone, and what Patrick and I typically do, what we started doing was one person in the booth and the other one of us outside directing with an engineer. And that works really well for us because we're so intimately familiar, not only with each other, that didn't come out right, but you know what I mean, artistically. Patrick and I have been friends for like 20 years. So we had an artistic working relationship before we started recording these books. And so we work very well together. And so one of us, when it's the male point of view, then Patrick's in the booth and I'm outside directing. And then we just run and switch off with somebody in, somebody out, somebody in, somebody out. It gets really exciting when Suze's points of view start getting like a paragraph, a paragraph, a paragraph, and toward the end of her books. And at that point, we usually sit inside the booth with each other, two mics, and if we're not in the booth already, but you know, we've done an occasion where we're facing each other in the booth, which makes it really funny when the intimacy comes up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're like, we both have the maturity of a 14-year-old boy, so it's a little giggling sometimes there. It's hard to make eye contact with, you know, each other. Thank God. Somebody's, we're both on the manuscript and we're not going to talk about it later.
Yeah, ride me big boy till the cows come home.
That's one of my favorite lines ever that I've ever been able to say as an actor, acting since I was 17 until now.
Right, from Hot Target. I know that.
I remember you had to say it twice too.
Oh yes, of course.
Well, maybe 17 or 18 times, but two got in.
Yeah. So, seriously, that was a line in one of the books?
Yes. Oh, that's in Hot Target. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, and how crazy is that? I know that. Isn't that funny? Hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, I think the first time I had to say it, it was funny, and we almost didn't get through it. And then it wasn't it the last line of the book? And then it was like,
they knew it was funny at that point. The first time it was like in the middle of a very intimate scene and they both just cracked, the characters were cracking up, you know, and so we were just beside ourselves. It was just There's a lot of times when, you know, we're in tears, you know, trying desperately to keep, you know, to keep it together and move forward.
I know that when I'm writing it too, I'm sitting there at my computer.
Oh, we know you know that.
It comes back to what I was saying though about the delivery, because yes, these are funny scenes, and yes, there's the, you know, a lot of times the intimate scenes, the sex scenes are, you know, they're romance novels, so they're big and they're passionate and they're powerful, and to read that, you know, you have to be able to do it with a wink, but also with the kind of respect to the genre, because they're, yeah, the readers and the listeners who appreciate romance, it's for a reason, because love is like the ultimate human story, and love and hope and passion's a part of it, and so I really, as a listener, I really appreciate what you guys do with those scenes, because you just deliver them so very perfectly, and I love that so much.
We love that too. You know, I have to say that because this is it's funny because you know, everybody says, oh, I have a good voice, I think I could be an audiobook narrator, and Patrick and I have these conversations with people all the time, and that may be true. But it's like, you know, it's beyond a marathon. We worked on this book. We were 11 or 12 hours in the booth every day for 5 days. And it works. We work well together. We get a lot done. You know, we both have a lot of stamina. And so vocally and physically. And so, but, you know, people say to me, like, what is it like? What else does it take? And I have to tell you, as funny as this sounds, Patrick and I are both classically trained actors. And I think that is a skill that really lends itself toward this type of material, because classical theater is all very high stakes, but you have to really invest in it emotionally, but you can't take it over the top, and you have to walk that fine line, but it's very dramatic, very big, but it's also very real. And so it sounds funny when I tell people the best prep that I do for these books is I'm so grateful that I have a classical theater background, because it really helps. Me.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. That makes total sense to me. So yeah.
That's one of the cool things about doing those scenes too, is there's always something in there. Like, you know, one of our favorites is the, oh, you got to read it. I think it was, again, Hot Target. It was, but yeah, you know, but go ahead. Tell that.
It was hot. I'm trying to remember which book it was. But anyway, they are so excited, and he's trying to get his pants down over his combat boots, and he trips and hits his head on the corner of the coffee table and gets this big gash. And then the rest of the scene, people are like, yeah, what happened?
Yeah. But it's just, I mean, these larger than life people do like normal people stuff.
Right.
And they have normal people problems while they're doing this larger than life stuff. It's so it's so much fun to incorporate that. And it's really good, because the characters don't take themselves, well, they do take themselves very seriously, but Suze doesn't. So it's really good. I mean that in a good way too.
Yeah. Well, see, now I think that one of the ultimate kind of characteristics of a romance hero is a sense of humor. So the guy really has to be funny, or at least to have an appreciation of the funny. And of course, my female characters need that as well. They need to be able to appreciate, you know, humor, and because that's what, you know, that's what makes guys, in my opinion, so attractive. You know, the funny guys are gonna win every time. So
okay, well, I'm going to shift our focus a little bit and talk about the other really big Brockman news, which of course you all have been talking about indirectly, so we'll attack it head on now.
This is Leah Hensley. Please join us again tomorrow on February 4th for the second part of our chat with Suze, Melanie, and Patrick.